This is Phil Ferrand.
And
I am driving home, and I should have turned my radio off. I am going to turn the air conditioning on. It's a little warm today, but thank God for the warmth, because it could be 50 degrees below zero. So I would rather any day have it be warm than cold. It is episode 68. Pretty soon we're going to be at episode 70. Which is interesting. I had an interesting conversation with my son-in-law last week or the week before last. And he said, so do you ever check and see how many people are actually listening? I said, nope. He said, well, you don't? I said, no, not really. I don't care. I said, I do it for the few. You know, I don't necessarily do it for the many. Wow, that's not a smart thing. That is really not a smart thing. Maybe I should slow down and see if there's going to be an explosion. There is apparently a woman who has run out of gas. She's standing beside her car, having run out of gas, and looks like maybe her dad came with a gas can and is pouring gas in her car, and she's standing about 3 feet away smoking a cigarette. Oh, man. Anyways, you know, decisions, free will gets some people in trouble. Anyways, so I was talking to my son-in-law, and there's no explosion yet back there. Anyways, I was talking to my son-in-law, and he said, so do you ever check to see how many people are listening? I said, no, I don't care. I said, I'm doing this for the few. If people want to listen, that's fine. If they don't want to listen, that's fine. I said, who knows, Alan? Maybe I'm doing this for Clara, which is my little granddaughter. You know, maybe at some point in her life, she's going to start listening through these things and find something that she can help with that will help her with her life and help her make good decisions. Who knows? So I just keep doing them, and we'll see how things go. Anyways, have been working on the Super Secret Project. It's interesting because I had been working towards a more complicated version of it. And this week, with the 3D printer coming in, it was just like, all of a sudden, this idea went click in my head, and I thought I should work on the simpler version of this. And so I have dropped way back, and I'm going for a simple version that can have an attachment that moves it more towards the complex version, and then that attachment can be used with the more complex version. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how it all lays out. I did do my first test print with the 3D printer, and gotta tell you, it's pretty cool. I was under the impression that it took about 20 minutes to print a part, and so I took a not completely simple, but moderately simple part and loaded it up in the machine and shot it over there, and the predictor came up and said, this will take 2:23, and I thought to myself, 2 minutes and 23 seconds? There is no way this thing is gonna do that. So I'm sitting there watching it to see if it's actually 2 hours, and yeah, it wasn't. Or 2 minutes, yeah, it's 2 hours and 23 minutes. So 2 hours and 20 some odd minutes later, I had a little part there, and it's just very cool. It actually prints in 3D, lays down the plastic in passes, so that when you're done, you just have this little plastic thing, and it's very cool. Anyway, so I'm enjoying that a lot. I hope, depending on how my schedule goes this weekend, I hope by about Sunday to be ready to launch the actual standalone simple version, because the simple version is a whole lot simpler. It's basically one piece of plastic as opposed to four pieces of plastic. So the mold cost will be cheaper, and the design is much, much simpler on it, lots easier. So I'm really hoping by Sunday or so that I'm ready to do a print. We'll just see how that goes. If that goes well, then maybe some refinements are in order, and then I'll start getting pricing on actually producing it in a short run, and that if that all goes well, who knows here, in a month or two, maybe I'll have something up for sale, and I can actually tell you all what the Super Secret Project is. This past week, I think it was last Sunday, there was a total eclipse of the heart. No, of the sun. When I've been doing research on the total eclipse of the heart keeps coming up. But it was a solar total eclipse, which is a very, very cool thing. And frankly, it's on my list of things to do before I shuffle off this mortal coil. I was doing some reading because there's always tons of articles that lead up to this type of event. So I was doing some reading to see. This particular one was, I believe, in the southern hemisphere, mostly over the Pacific Ocean. And so you either had to hit one of the rare islands that it was crossing, or you had to get creative. I heard about a charter company that actually puts together eclipse tours, and they rent a jet, probably it's a jet, and they sell, it's like, it's some high amount. $6,500 to share a window and maybe $9,000 to have a window all to yourself. I wasn't sure how that would really work. I don't know if it'd tilt the plane, but because, you know, the sun is in the sky. But anyways, this guy was saying that what they do is they take the plane and then they put it into the path where the actual total eclipse is traveling, and so they just hang in that path. So instead of the eclipse only going for a couple of minutes, they get it for a long time. So that was pretty interesting. I was also reading an article by a journalist who covered her first total eclipse, I think, in the early 90s. And that particular one happened to be in Hawaii, and for whomever she was working for, they traveled to Hawaii to do a story on this. And she said they had rented a car, which was good. But they had to get up early in the morning, because it was early in the morning to see the eclipse. And so they got up early in the morning, and they drove around looking for a clearing in the sky. Thankfully, they found a clearing. There were some other people that had already amassed there, and she said her husband was kind of grousing a little bit and complaining that he had to get up so high. What was the big deal? He had seen pictures of this before. And she said it was progressing and progressing and progressing. And she said when it hit totality, she said her husband started screaming. And she said so did everybody else around them, hooping and hollering and carrying on. And you do hear that reaction when you watch videos of eclipses. Typically, you can hear in the background when that eclipse hits totality, just before it, people start clapping, shouting, and then when it hits totality, you know, there's a big whoop that goes up. And I got to thinking about that this week, and I thought, you know, that is very interesting. I mean, for all that we know now of what's going to happen, you can describe this scientifically. You can list it factually, why it is what it is. And yet, these total eclipses seem to evoke some emotion within us, some deep emotion within us. And I started thinking about this week and talking to my buddies about that, wondering what that was, what is going on there. And we didn't necessarily come to any conclusions, but I'm wondering if some of it doesn't have to do with the fact that within ourselves, even though intellectually we can say we understand something, experientially is a whole different matter. One of the things I asked my buddies this week, is if they'd ever been in an earthquake. Because that's a pretty interesting experience as well. I mean, we grow up with this idea that one is safe on solid ground. And even though certainly any person who lives in the United States has heard about earthquakes, and certainly anyone who lives in California, until you really experience an earthquake, it's just not the same thing. I was telling them that one day I have as part of my memories from the Philippines, which was in an earthquake zone, coming home and popping the top off the cake saver and going to cut a piece of cake and the knife coming down empty because the cake had moved. And I remember sitting at the dining room table in our house that was built on solid ground and just feeling things shake and having the little hanging lights going ching, 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 ching. It's a very weird experience because all of a sudden you're not safe on solid ground. 3 or 4 years back now, we had a major ice storm here in the Ozark. It was like a 100-year ice storm. I think there was an inch to an inch and a quarter of ice that had gotten laid down on everything. It came in waves. Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday night. I mean, it was brutal. And of course, the trees, well, the power lines and things can't take that. And the trees, of course, can't take it. And our house is nestled in among the woods. And we always loved that about our house. That's why we built there. And over the years, the woods have just gotten thicker and bigger. And now there's this ice storm. And in the middle, we're sitting there in the middle of this ice storm, and we hear this boom, boom. And the tops of these trees are snapping off and flipping around and dropping towards the ground. And this jagged edge of this broken branch ends up coming straight down sometimes and sticking in the ground. And you look at how this thing has impaled the ground and you think, oh man, I am really glad I was not standing under that. We had neighbors who had roofs caved in and power lines pulled down, poles knocked over and everything. And I told a friend at that time, I said, you know, it really kind of changes the way you look at trees. Before this, trees were beautiful. Now, trees can be the enemy. And you can think about trees that way, but until you've been in an ice storm, it's just not the same thing. Once you see it, it's like, oh, man. Every time you come home, you kind of look at the trees around your house. And of course, it's summer now, so there's not much danger, but you're going into the fall eventually and into the winter, and you're just looking at the trees thinking, I wonder if this is the year. We followed on that ice storm with another ice storm the next year. It wasn't nearly as bad, but it was bad enough. And people were starting to talk about, is this the way it's going to be from here on out? You know, as have there have been enough climate changes that we're just going to have ice storms every year. And if so, does that mean we need to start clearing away the trees from our houses? All of these things really come back to this idea of knowing things, thinking you know things, but experientially not really knowing them. And there is a level to experiential knowledge that is different than anything else. One of my favorite quotes that I personally attribute to Malcolm Muldridge, I don't know if he should be attributed to this quote because I can't find the quote, but it went something along the lines of, the first thing that I expect to hear when I get to heaven is the unmistakable sound of laughter. And I think about that sometimes. it's more in the mornings now when I'm going out to get a little exercising, sometimes a little walking, sometimes a little jogging, sometimes a little running. I'm listening to the Sermon on the Mount. I just cue it up every day and listen to the Sermon on the Mount. And there is a spot in there where Jesus says, just don't worry. Don't worry about what you're going to eat and what you're going to wear. Your Heavenly Father knows what you have need of. He will take care of you. And I think the point of the quote that the first thing I expect to hear when I get to heaven is the unmistakable sound of laughter. I think the point of that really comes down to that realization that things are not as we experientially knew them to be. Yes, we have knowledge that God is our provider. Yes, we have knowledge that He's going to take care of us. Yes, we might even have some history that in His own ways He has taken care of us and watched over us. And yet, we're not at the end of the game yet. We're not in the realization of those things that we know in our hearts and in our minds. And I just wonder, of the things we think we're going to know when we get to heaven, how much more is there that once we get to heaven, we will look back at our lives and go, ow, why in the world did I ever think that once we are really, truly honest with ourselves and can see our lives from an objective perspective, will we look back and think, what in the world was I thinking? It will be very interesting to me to be at that moment of revelation, be it when I die, or be it if Jesus comes back before I die. It's going to be very interesting to me. And I know that there's some people that will say, well, you know, it's really a shame you're going to have to live your whole life before you find out. But you know, my response to those people is, you know what? Even if Jesus didn't rise from the dead, even if there wasn't a God out there, my life is made so much richer by the practices and by the framework that is built on the Christian belief system, that if I go to sleep and wink out and that's it, and I never think another thought, and my life just ends, that is okay. Because this framework I'm living in is so powerful, and it's so complete, and so compelling, that it doesn't really matter if there's a big woo-hoo at the end of it. But you know, I think there is going to be a big woo-hoo at the end of it. And I think it's going to sort of be like that solar eclipse, you know, you have this knowledge and this understanding about what's going to happen, and you think you have it all under control and stuff, but I think when it actually hits, there's going to be a lot of hollering and screaming. And because of that, I have determined that I'm getting my mail. I am definitely going to see a solar eclipse before I die. Lord willing. Because there may be a corollary there for me to say, you know, I think this is what it's going to be like when the big revelation comes, or when I die. This is what the woohoo is going to be like. That you knew something, you knew it. And then when that eclipse finally happens, kaboom, the corona lights up. Everybody's going to be like, woohoo! So, the other thing I've been doing this week is I've been telling my friends, what are you doing in 2017? And they've been saying, why, what's going on in 2017? I'm backing into my garage. And in 2017, there is going to be a total eclipse, and it's going to cut right across the United States of America. And in Missouri. It's going to be here about 2 o'clock in the afternoon, so it's going to be perfect, provided there's no cloud cover. And it's August the 21st, I think, August the 21st, 2017. And so we're making plans now. I will be 59. Well, wait, won't quite be 59. I'll be 58 because my birthday's in November. But we are going to go chase the eclipse. We're going to go up and we're probably the week before start looking at the long range weather plans. And we're going to try to pick ourselves a spot. We've got the entire width of Missouri to choose from. So we're going to pick ourselves a spot where it looks like it's going to be sunny. And we're going to pack up a bunch of people and we're going to the solar eclipse. My daughter and son-in-law have already signed on. And I think my best bud from next door has already signed on. So we're putting together a group. So, depending on when you're listening to this, if 2017 hasn't happened yet, you are welcome to come and join us. This is Phil Farron, and I have made it home.